Sie hören eine Veranstaltung der Leipziger Buchmesse. Für die Inhalte ist die Leipziger Buchmesse nicht verantwortlich. Viel Spaß beim Hören.
Englisch unterhalten, weil wir so viele Gäste aus anderen Ländern hier haben. So, welcome to the next talk at Europa 21. We the civilized, what after all is European civilization? That is our topic now. And there is this assumption that Europeans are decent, well-educated and cultivated. And we will discuss now if this is mainly true or if there might be some further improvement. We have three interesting participants on this podium for the discussion. I say hello to Rokaya Diallo from France on my right, Diana Kinnert from Germany, and Gayat Almadoun, who is, and I guess this is a little bit the topic, who is from Palestine and Syria and from Sweden. And the question is, who belongs to which place? And I think we will get back to this a little bit later. So welcome all of you. My name is Jenny Friedrich-Frexer. I will do the moderation for the next hour, and we will start here on the podium and later would like to discuss with you if you have some questions. Before we start, I briefly introduce our guests. Rokaya Diallo was born in Paris and lives there, and she's a French journalist and filmmaker. She's an activist as well, fighting against racism and sexism in France. And there she is very well known. She's a host on television and a commentator in newspapers and magazines. She has received several awards, and her last book's title was Afro, and it deals with skin and hair, with ideals of beauty, and with racism. And it was published in France at the French publisher Les Arènes. Diana Kinnert, born in Wuppertal, now lives in Berlin. She's a political scientist, activist, and author. And she's a member of the German party CDU, Christlich Demokratische Union. And she has been on the Young People's Advisory Council of the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung. She writes a column for Zeit Online, and her latest book has the following title: The Future Appears to Me Rather Black, Arguing for a Modern Form of Conservatism. It was published by the German publisher Rowohlt. And for everyone here who's not so familiar with German politics, I should maybe add that the color of Diana Kinnert's party, CDU, is black. So The Future Appears Rather Black is not that negative as it might sound at the first place. Gayat Almadoun was born in a refugee camp for people from Palestine in Damascus. He studied Arabic literature in Damascus, and since 2008 he lives in Stockholm. Also, he travels all the time. He told me that. He's not in Stockholm, but on the road all the time. He's a filmmaker and a poet, and just now the German publisher Arche published some of his poems in Germany. I show you the book. It's called Ein Raubtier, das Mittelmeer heißt, A Beast Called Mediterranean. So welcome again, all of you, and let's start with our talk. When we hear the words European civilization, there is this sound of enlightenment and Greek statues, of Flemish art and human rights. You all live in Europe, but you all have family ties to places out of Europe. Your parents, Rokaya Diallo, come from Senegal and Gambia. Your family comes from Palestine. Your mother is from the Philippines. So you are also connected with other places. And I would like to ask all of you at the first question, this civilized Europe, is this your picture of Europe as well? Or do you have other pictures when you hear the word Europe?
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, thank you for being here. I'm really happy to have that talk, that transcultural talk about Europe and civilization. So I would say, I'd say that, as you said, my family is from Senegal, so they Actually, when my parents were born, they were born French because Senegal was a French colony. So the encounter between France and Senegal was very violent at the first time. France claimed that it was supposed to civilize the African countries, but the reality that the purpose of the colonizers were to use and to gain the wealth of the African countries. So the memories of my parents during the colonial time are not that civilized. And what I can say about the fact that you mentioned the thinkers of the Enlightenment times is that there has always been a double standard. While they were claiming human rights, equality, many of them, especially the French ones, were gaining their money through slavery. So equality and enlightenment was valid for European citizens, but at the same time, they were funding the fact that they could, take time to write and to think about freedom and liberty by oppressing other people, by deporting millions of Africans to the Caribbean and to the Americas. So to me, for sure, we can link Europe to civilization, but we need to think that there are always a double standard. And the fact that we can enjoy our freedom and our liberty really relies on the fact that we are at the same time denying the same rights to other people.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the perspective. When I see Germany or the European Union in a historical perspective, then I share your thoughts that we have to think where our enjoyment for pluralistic values is coming from. And we can see also like in German history that we have a very complicated history with the Holocaust. So it's not everything very bright in the European Union. But I think if we're not looking at the historical background, but how people live here right now and how the European Union also gets the goal of so many people who wants to come here, just seems that it has to be some desirable framework which seems good and nice for everybody else in the world. I was born in Wuppertal, so I have never experienced living somewhere outside. I live the just very natural and human principle of self-reference. So all the people I know were just European. Like I was in a European school. I was I had my Erasmus University in Amsterdam, so I was purely European. When I was traveling around the world, I saw how people have a very good judgment on European countries because of all the values which makes European Union countries very diverse and which gives everybody the opportunity to make business here and to share ideas and to get up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I really don't know what to say, but if I can describe it. Yes. I will try to describe the question as I understand it. I am a result of the European racism, or what we call the anti-Semitic. When it began in Spain, Fernando and Isabella began to kill the Jewish and Arab, and it's end with the final solution. And Europe, to pay solution for this anti-Semitic, they give my land, Palestine, as a solution. Instead of they pay their land for the killing of the Jewish in very racist way, they let the Palestinian pay. So I lost my country. I born in the Palestinian refugee camp. So in a way, I'm connected to this European history because we are the only nation in the world still paying for what the Nazi did during the Second War. The European people solved the problem, especially in West Germany, and I really admire the way how they deal with their history. And there is one nation now still pay for what Adolf Hitler did in the final solution, we, the Palestinian. So in a way, I'm connected to this. And this is show very important things for me as a person who work in literature, that we are connected in a way. What you do in a place, it will give result in another place. And by this way, I could be even the result of the occupation, because without the occupation of Palestine, I will not be exist, because my mother is Syrian, and my father will never go to Syria if he was not thrown up by the Israeli occupation and went to Syria and meet my mother, and then I came. So I am a result of the Palestinian occupation, as many people as a result of the Holocaust, because his grandfather died and his grandmother met another man and he became exist, and all these things. So from this perspective, I didn't see the borders. And I don't care about borders in general. The other side is that I admire the European civilization in a way, because I feel that I belong to the things I like. I really admire the way that the European civilization rebuilt the world after the Arabic civilization. The Arabic civilization was the longest in history and was the biggest in history, from Spain to China for 1,000 years. And then after we go outside Spain, the Toscana began to rise and the European civilization began. And they rebuilt the world in a way I really like, from philosophy to music to literature to the way that I feel that I belong to. So I always think about the European philosophy and like this, that's something I belong to. From this perspective, I didn't see that I am in the other side. Me and the people I like, we are in one side from this perspective. But I want to say, to not take more time, that we have in Europe, am I speaking up as a European? Because I pay tax in Europe. We have a fish memory. And we forgot that what we saw now when we see the Syrian people drowning in the sea, that it's happened with the European itself, when the Belgian people was by millions running away, when the French refused to let 1 million Spanish enter after the Franco began to kill them, and when they entered the borders by force, they arrested them and they threw them in Algeria. And many European, I saw their photos of thousands of people in boat drowning in the sea when they tried to go to North Africa, running from the way. And millions of people ran away to the New World. But now they began to discuss that if the refugee allowed to come here or not. Now, we should rethink about this question as a human. And think about the literature of history. If Hannah Arendt didn't run away from the SS, or Brecht didn't run away from the Nazi, or Edward Said didn't run away to America from the occupation, or. So from this perspective, I see that every person has the right to move to any place he would like.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's have a look at the present, and let's have a look to France, where you live, where we see nowadays a strong fighting and strong political discussion about the question, who is French and what is French? There's Marine Le Pen with her party Front National, which will have another name soon, a new name. But this Front National tries to define very much what being French means. What's your point of view on being French? Is there something like a French we? Does this exist? Could it be defined? Or
So the question is not only the question asked by the Front National, actually. Mm-hmm. It has been asked before by the former president Nicolas Sarkozy, who was the first to create a minister dedicated to immigration and national identity. So mm-hmm. there was in the name of the ministry an opposition between national identity and immigration. It was the first time in French history. And then he decided to start a debate on national identity. So as a French, being born from African parents, I never asked myself if I was French or not. It's the other people who ask me where I am from. And whenever I answer that I'm from Paris, people need to have more information. They're like, where are you from? Where were you before? Actually, there is no before, because I was born in Paris. So the thing is that we as children of immigrants, we think of ourselves as belonging, but we are constantly constantly reminded of the fact that we don't look like what Europe think as the regular citizens. So it's not like if I compare my situation to someone who would be from from the US, for example. You have people who are African American. They can embrace their part, which is originally from Africa, but at the same time it is they are undoubtedly Americans. And being, a French citizen, a European citizen, it's difficult for me to, and for the people who look like me, to feel truly, you know, truly citizen because you're denied the fact that you can be, you know, a citizen. And because you are a lack, you have a lack of representation. When you watch TV, you know, in France, I'm one of the few TV journalists of color who you know, take part for the to the general discussion and comments about politics. So we are not that many. And when I was a kid, there was nobody to which I could refer to. So that's a debate that we need to have. And it's not only the debate of the National Front. It's a debate that all the political parties should have. And the other debate is related to Islam, the fact that many countries think about Islam as you know, a religion that doesn't belong to Europe. Whereas I can say that in France, the first mosque was built in the 20th century, in the early 20th century, in 1905, which means that Islam has been, you know, European and French for a long time, and even longer in Spain, for example. Mm-hmm. And we think, we keep watching and looking at, you know, people with other backgrounds than Christians as being people who just arrived. And we are, we really having trouble accepting them as belonging and thinking that their religion, their cultures are feeding the European culture. Because the time in history when Europe was at its best culturally and artistically was the Renaissance, la Renaissance. And it was the time where artists used to travel from a country to another. For example, Leonardo da Vinci was Italian, but he settled in France. And that's how French art and you know, European culture and art was able to be so vivid, so you know, having such an impact that, you know, is still relevant today. Mm-hmm. And closing the borders to me means, how can I say, it's not something that would be beneficial to the European culture. We really need to embrace the fact that we, you know, we're so lucky to be able to live in such a multicultural continent, and that's not something negative. To me, it's something that feeds me as a European citizen, and I'm really happy to be able to claim myself as a French citizen having roots in Africa. It's something that is exceptional and that I really embrace, and to me that's something that should be, you know, embraced as you know, I'm fortunate according to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's switch to Sweden and to the situation there right now. Sweden is one of the most liberal countries in Europe, but there's also a right-wing party, the Sweden Democrats, Schwedendemokraten, who's quite strong right now. They have nearly 13% in the last elections. For you, Gayat Almadun, how does it fit with this reality, with a self image of so many Swedish men and women to live in an open and tolerant country? What's your view on the Swedish society right now? Is there a huge gap between these two parts, or?
No, you know, Karl Marx, he say that history repeats itself. First as a tragedy or phrase, and second as comedy. And it is a little funny what's going on now, funny in a sad way. Like, we created the fascism. It's not America who created the fascism. We, in that black shirt in Milano, Europe, created the fascism. It's our problem, and we should deal with it. It exists. It's only rising and going down. So it didn't disappear. And I give example before that I really like the Western Germany, how they deal with their history. Because that you find mostly the new Nazi came from countries was under the Soviet control because they didn't deal with their history. So it's the best way to deal with our history as a European, because we created something built on ideas we have here. And now it's rising again. The problem that we didn't learn the lesson from, the warning from history after what's happened in 1933 when the Nazi catch the power. And I see what's happened in Hungary, for example, or the rising of the right wings in Greek and like this, is more dangerous than what's happened in Sweden, because in the same time in Sweden, the right wings rising, the anti right wings, they are really rising in Sweden. So, yes, there is 13% voted for Sverige Demokrat, but there is many people is against that, where you didn't find this in Poland, where 3 months ago it was 50,000 people in the street saying real Nazi thing. Like, that is the dangerous. So for me, Sweden, it's in the same, in the safe area, because it didn't have a colonialism history. It was like 200 years without war, and we will know how to deal with that. But I'm really afraid of like Poland. They have 100 Syrian refugees. 100, and they make demonstration and after demonstration and after demonstration. Turkey have 4 million. Like Germany took at least maybe 600,000-700,000. Like, how you could say then the European Union, when Poland have 100? Once they asked me on a stage, what do you think about Poland? Like, I told them, take this 100 and make a football team with them or anything. Like, how it could 100 person make a problem for a country? Or and 2 years ago, they make a meeting in the parliament and they decided something. I prefer if they didn't decide it, because it's really against our values. They say, oh, Poland will accept another 100 Syrian refugees if they are Christian. What the fuck is this? I don't know how to describe this. I really respect Sweden because they opened their borders for the Syrians, and Germany did the same. But when I saw a country belong to this civilization, where we are in the center of the light, and they treat the immigrant not in the same way they behave when Warsaw was under attack and they became immigrant. You understand me? I felt that this is against our value, and if our values as a humans, not as a European, changed, then we will go down.
Mm-hmm. Let's say a minute with the upcoming of the riot, the Anarkinet in Germany. We now have also, for the first time since a long time, a right-wing party in the parliament, the AfD. You are a member of the Conservative Party. Do you see any failure in conservative politics over the last year that helped the right-wing populists to become so strong?
Yes, I see our failure, but not only in my own party, I think in all political parties. I don't think that we can find solutions for our right-wing populism if we just stay with the symptoms of talking about racism and talking about the migration crisis. I think that we need to look for the reasons for insecurity, for being like very vulnerable, for being like very easily, to be like very easily interrupted by right populist answers. And I have two situations where I think which can help. We had before our elections, there were the Kanzler duel, which was like the TV show where our social democrat candidate was discussing with our Christian Democrat candidate Angela Merkel, and there were four journalists from German channels, and one of the journalists was asking about half an hour questions about terrorism, questions about Islam, questions about refugees, stuff like that. I read the discussion, or I was following the discussion on Twitter, where everybody was saying, like, he's not doing a journalist job, he's asking all the right-wing populist questions. After the TV show, the journalist was saying, but he has to ask the questions because the people had the questions. Two days later, there was another show, which was called Wahlarena, where the two candidates were in the platform again. But there weren't journalists asking the questions. There were people asking the questions. And the people's questions weren't about the refugees, weren't about terrorism. They were talking about e-health. They were talking about fair salary. They were talking about housing. They were talking about all the topics which were connected to their lives. And this was a situation for me where I recognized that maybe talking about who's stealing my money, who's the one I have to fight with, for example, the refugees are stealing my money, Muslims are stealing my culture. I think this is just a debate about the symptoms, and we as politicians has to look where the reasons. And the reasons are, of course, in a time, in an age where everything is changing, where we have globalization, where we have digital structures, where we have a transformation in economic systems, where not every job is safe anymore, where jobs are changing. I think that these are like very legitimate reasons why people feel insecure. And as politicians, we have to find the debates and the solutions for the people's lives. And I think if they are confident with their own situation, they aren't in the need for to look who they have to fight with.
Mm-hmm. debates about the symptoms and the reasons behind it. Do you see any failure in left-wing politics in Europe over the last years?
Yeah, I think that we were speaking about the far right and the fact that they put certain issues at the center of the political debates. And I have the feeling that instead of tackling and contesting the fact that those issues were not the prevalent issues, they just accepted those the terms of the debate that were imposed by the far right, and they started to discuss those issues that were not central, even in the people's minds. So I think that their responsibility is not to have answered to the issues that were the real ones, like economical issues, housing, unemployment. And instead of that, they just created, as well as the medias, issues on which they could give the impression that they could act on. Like, it's way easier to say that you will act on migration, that you will try to protect the European identity, than to say that you will really fight unemployment or a housing problem, money problems with figures. So I think that they really didn't succeed in doing what they were supposed to do as left-wing parties. And today, what I can say is that the terms, what used to be only the issues that were central to the far right, to the Front National, for example, in France, have spread all over the political landscape. And it's something to me that is a major change. In the 70s, in the 80s, immigration was not spoken about as a problem in all the parties. But 30 years later, to all parties, it's something that you should speak about as a problem. You cannot speak about migrations as something that is not a problem anymore. And to me, it's a defeat from the left-wing parties.
Mm-hmm. So you all say there are political topics on the agenda that are not central, but we have the right-wing parties who are discussing these topics. And when we talk about civilization in Europe, I think a lot of people nowadays have the impression that the right-wing populists crossed a line of civilization, and that it's really hard to see what it's possible to be said in European Parliament these days, that there are open racist agendas as well in politics as in public life. So what's your point of view on that? Do you think now in Europe we are losing something essentially human?
Can I say something?
Yeah.
But because, like, civilization, it didn't came for free. Like Edward Said say, knowledge is not innocent in a way. So, yes, we have civilization in the last 500 years. But when you have a hot water in your house, it means that there is some place in the world have a cold water. So this civilization give a lot and take a lot from the colonialism history. Like, we as a European, we killed the biggest amount of people got killed in history. We were burning women because they are witches. We throw the black people in the ocean by millions. We kill 400 million Red Indian. We invade the world. We make Bangladesh, it should be the most rich country in the world, one of the most poor countries in the world. We destroyed everything to rebuild it in a way. This is the dark side of our civilization. So you can't have... We can't speak about one side. We have really hard history. The Christianity in the Middle Ages was really, really hard. They were torturing people under the church. They killed thousands, 100,000 in the Middle East and like this. So we have this part. In the other side, we have the shining part. It is like you are in a lighted room. You can't see outside. When you are under the light, you can't see. You are in the center. And this, what we build, we can't deny it in one day and say no. Why country like Holland is rich? There is no way to make country like small country like Holland this rich without and Tunisia and all this colony. We should speak about our history, how we killed 1.5 million Algerian as a France, and they refused to say sorry even. And these people, when they were killing them, the Algerian was fighting for freedom, France was under occupation and asked the world to help her, to help France to fight against Hitler in the same way she refused the Algerian to, and they, until now they refuse to say sorry. So this is the hard part we should speak. But who's the people who not allowed to make critique in the history? People under occupation, the slaves, the woman under the patriarchy, and the refugee now. You're not allowed to make critique. You don't like it? Go back to your land. No. Everyone have the right to say critique. And we have very dark history. In the same time we created all these great things. So I think immigrants like me have the right to make critique and to discuss our very hard history who make us really rich and have all these values.
The civilized Europe, is something lost right now, or how do you see it?
I don't think that you can refer to Europe as civilized if you don't say that the other continents are civilized as well. Because to me, it's a point of view that doesn't make any sense, given the fact that, in every continent you have the same kind of, arts creation. Even if you speak about human rights, we are, we just celebrated the 800 years of the Magna Carta in Great Britain, but in Mali, in Africa, at the same times there was the Charter of Mandane, which is one of the oldest human texts defending human rights, which is not known because it was made in Africa and it was made in 1235, so it was like 20 years after the Magna Carta, but it was way before all the texts protecting the human rights in the other European countries. So I think that the way we frame this question is too Eurocentric, and the question that we ask ourselves are not the same that people can ask themselves in Asia or in Africa. And I totally agree with what was just said, and I can add that it still has consequences today. If you speak about, the slave trade, it reflects on the way people of color are treated in the U.S., but also in Europe. France is the only country to be present on five continents. The largest border that France has with another country is not Germany, it's Brazil, because there is a French territory which is named Guyana, which is in South America. The only territory in South America which is still under European control is French. So which means that we have people, French citizens, who are from slave descent. They don't get the same treatment as the French people who live in the French mainland, which means that the history of colonialism and of slavery still has, very concrete consequences today. If you go today to Guadeloupe, if you go today to Martinique or to the La Réunion Island, which is in the Indian Ocean, you can see by your eyes the difference of treatment between people of color and white people. So we cannot, just think about colonialism or slave trade only with a historical perspective. Because why does France still have, army in Mali, in Senegal, in Niger, as, those countries are supposed to be independent? So what is the meaning of having, armies from another country occupying space that is not their space anymore? So I think that, thinking about history, about the processes of domination, means addressing the current problems. Because it was very accurate to say that a small country like Holland is very rich, very rich, very wealthy, whether it doesn't have anything on its soil. And at the same time, a country like Congo is so poor and has so many, so much wealth. Is the richest country in the world. So how can you explain that the rich, the wealth of Africa only benefit to people who are not Africans? So that's something, to me, that is in contradiction with the idea that Europe is civilized, because Europe, for example, puts much more money in protecting its border than in rescuing people who try to get to Europe. So how civilized is that? How civilized is it to be more preoccupied by the fact that you want people not, you don't want people to come on your place than, you know, rescuing them, trying not, you know, to help them not to drown in the Mediterranean Sea and to be safe, you know, to have a safe life. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I don't believe that the problem and the challenge of rising right-wing populism is typical European, because if we compare the structures and the problems with, for example, America, we have like the same structures also there. So I think the structures are not about our geographic stadium or position, but it's maybe about something about Western democracies and the stadium of Western democracy and the openness and the integrity of Western democracies. It's also something about maybe industrialization and the loss of security right now. It maybe is also something about the desire of national identity in a new context of globalization. So I think you can compare the situation with Western democracies in Europe also with one, for example, in the USA. I can remember my situation when I was in school. I was reading that there is somebody like Le Pen in France, and there is already somebody like Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, and we only had 3% at the NPD, so at our right extremist party in Germany. And I was thinking of maybe like the German people are so much more educated, maybe because of our history. Right now we can see that the Germans are not smarter, but maybe because of our historical perspective, it was just hidden. So I think that now we have to look what could be like the future narrative and what could be like fighting with the reasons. As we mentioned before, there are many social and insecurity policies. We need to find new solutions for new crises. But I also think that in the last years I was arguing that I'm never discussing with the right-wing people, because why should I? They are not represented in the parliament. But the concept of a democratic parliament is that people vote people there who are like trusting them and who are like giving their voice. And when we have a potential of maybe 20% right-wing populism, we have to talk with them in the parliament. But I think we can do it very precise and without hysterical tabooing them, because I think this is just giving them the chance to insert themselves as victims again. Mm-hmm.
You lived in Damascus and in Syria for a long time of your life, and Syria now is totally destroyed, and a place of horrible war crimes, a non-civilized place. When you see what's going on in Syria right now, and if you see what's discussed in Europe these days, do you have sometimes the feeling that you would like to ask the Europeans wake up and see how lucky you are?
You know, my family is living under bombing from 7 years now. I lost 2 uncles and brother last year. And the Assad regime is bombing 400 cities from 8 years in front an image of all the world. ISIS killed 2,500 people. Assad killed around 2 million. We reported 600,000. And everywhere I go, people ask me about ISIS. Yes, ISIS killed 2,500 from the revolution. Assad killed 2 million. Could we discuss that? How Assad could bomb Aleppo and Homs and Damascus and another 400 city and town and village from 8 years and no one even move? It is the same repetition. So European people was lying when they say we didn't know about the Jewish. I was really believing them. Oh, we didn't know about the Jewish. Now I understand that they are liars. They know everything about what's going on in Syria. They do nothing. They ask me about ISIS everywhere. ISIS came 3 years after the revolution, 3.5 years, by the way, where Assad was bombing 3.5 years. He killed at least 1 million before ISIS appeared. He killed 500,000 before Nusra appeared. He killed 300,000 before the Free Army appeared, when it was a peaceful demonstration for 8 months. So, yes, we have something wrong inside us as a human. I call it before the silent chromosome, the one make us silent toward the killing of the Jewish, and then in Rwanda make us silent, in Kosovo make us silent, and now towards the Syrian. But with the Syrian, it's make more brutal, because it was the first time in history uploaded every day on YouTube. with 1.5 million video on YouTube. So the people is witnesses what's going on in Syria every day and do nothing. Nothing. It's like they decided together, people and governments and media. I feel shame because I'm left. All my left friend supporting the dictatorship in Syria. Every communist party in the world, the right wings in Europe and the communists supporting the dictatorship in Syria. It is really shame, man. My mother is in the shelter from 7 years. And I try to... When I say to these people, this to the people, they keep silent. In a way, it's weird, actually. You know, I have a Jewish friend, he told me, like, if this happened with Muslim in Europe, you should fight. Don't make like us. Exactly, he said it for me in Stockholm. If the Islamophobia began to grow, fight. Like, I don't know what to say. What I want to say that now there is millions of people killing every way in a brutal way by Syrian regime with weapons from Russia and Iran, and the world is silent. We have 11 million refugees inside Syria, 5 million refugees outside Syria, 2 million who disappear, and still they recycle the trash of Assad to make him president more. So I think this is what Karl Marx exactly say, what I say in the beginning, that history repeats itself, but second time it's a comedy. What happened in Syria is very dark comedy.
Diana Kinnert, we have this sad situation in Syria, and we have many people coming from Syria to Europe right now. And we have many people in places like Germany who have the fear now that refugees who come will get things for free, whereas some Germans are forgotten by politics. Do you understand these fears?
In a kind of way, yes, because I see that times are changing and people feel more and more insecure, mostly because of their jobs. I have the situation of that the majority of white women in America were voting for Donald Trump, despite of the fact what Donald Trump was saying about women. So the fact is not that... I think there's the term of Bertolt Brecht, zuerst das Fressen und dann die Moral. So it's first about the economic view, and then it's about feminism and about my role in society. And because of that, I can understand that people are very easily seduced right now about the very easily answers. But of course, it's nothing, and we have the debate in my own party that there's half of the party... hunting right-wing answers because they think they can reintegrate the right-wing people, but it's just not integration when you just say the same. So, but we have the discussion in my political party, and I just believe in a different solution. I believe in the solution giving answers to the very to the social questions, because I think these are the reasons and not the symptoms. But of course, we have, and you said before that you don't believe in borders. I'm, as somebody who is for 10 years in politics now, I think that we need practical systems. And we need practical systems when I'm living in a house with 10 people and people want to decide about the color of my bed, but they are living in a different house. I can understand that there's no democratic principle. And when people are paying taxes here, they need the money for their own age when they get older and for their own social system. And I can understand that we have mechanisms and when we have a framework and we have a national one that you can't pay for everybody else. But of course, we need very transparent and open systems where you can just see what's and of course, this is nothing which has to do with war. We have, as a European country, as a European continent, as the system of the European Union, we have, for example, the social responsibility to do something. But I just think that it's a very short answer to just say everybody can come here, because then everybody will be disappeared when it's the time back to build their home again in the foreign countries. So I believe in a very global solution that all the countries, not only the European ones, but all the Western democracies which are rich enough, needs to find a solution to find foreign diplomatic and also financial services where you can punish, for example, Russian policy, or where you can find them solutions that everything else will brighten up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Diallo, if we come back to the question, what could European civilization mean today? You said before we should have another perspective on the historical background. It should not be so Euro-centric. In which ways are for you the old European values like freedom, equality and fraternity, are they still alive? Or is there a need to revitalize them in another way? Or do we need a complete new idea of Europe?
I think that we cannot just claim the principles without applying them. We were speaking about Syria. Most of the Syrian refugees go to Jordan and Turkey. They're not even in Europe. So many of them have been welcomed in certain countries of Europe, like Sweden or Germany. But most of them are in Asia, actually. And if it comes to the refugees from African countries, that most of them stay in Africa. So claiming principles without giving yourself the means of applying them is meaningless. It's the same when you are a country and you sell weapons to Saudi Arabia, which is bombing Yemen. What does it mean? It's the case of my country. What does it mean to proclaim liberty, equality, fraternity, and arming a country which is bombing another one without questioning yourselves about the fact that the Declaration of Human Rights is your constitution. So it cannot be only a principle that is written on a paper or on a building. It has to be something that really sharps, that really frame your political views. So that to me there is a discrepancy between how you can claim values, you can create books, you can create plays, art, promoting those values and at the same time not applying them. It was the same during the colonization, and that was interesting because France was fighting, it was what you just said, France was fighting, for its freedom against the Nazi regime, and France used the force of the colonial troops to fight, the Nazis, and those people who were colonized used the human rights against France to say, okay, if you want to, you want to civilize us, you need to embrace the principle that you've taught to us, and those principles don't include the fact that you can colonize us. So there is, I have the feeling that today there is still that double standard, which is that those principles apply to people who are European citizens, but when it comes to other people, those people doesn't apply anymore. We don't, we don't take so much care of the rights, of the protection of the rights of the people, of color all over the world, whether they're Asian or African or Middle Eastern. When it comes to them, all the principles doesn't have the same vitality anymore. So I think that, to be really relevant, the European civilization really needs to think about what it means to have, to support those declarations of human rights. It's not only something that you say, it's something that you do, and it's something that should be visible in action.
Thank you. I would have a lot of more questions on these double standards, but time is running, and I would like to invite you, the audience, to feel free to add something. If you have comments or questions, just let us know. There? Over there. Yeah. Do we have another mic? Yeah, here.
Yeah. So it all started in the First World War because the British, they came over Arabia and they got colonies and they don't want anybody anymore. And the Germans, they got bombed out because of a stupid Hitler. He was a not very nice person. And with the war opened, the East Germans, they always felt like they'd been deprived because they lived in the East and had no such welfare as we had in West Germany, because they always thought we got a better life. In a way, we got a better life because we can speak out. They couldn't. And that's a problem. And now with them coming back, they can't really decide what they're going to do. Are they going to stay right and chuck everybody out and say, we are first? Or say, oh, we're going to stick with the West Germans and we say, okay, they can come. After the Second World War, everybody was poor, basically, and a lot of people came from all different countries to join in West Germany, and they all worked hard to get the wealth. And I think a lot of problems is the Germans are very scared of losing their welfare and their health. That's what it is. But a lot of people help as well.
That's true, but I think this was a comment. Are there...
It's a comment.
Yeah. Are there more... Thank you. Are there more questions? Maybe? Yeah.
I just got one question. Why are we talking about Europe? Because after hearing all of that, it seems like... Oh, yeah, sorry. it seems like Europe is more of a prison than an open space for people to come here and to...
Can you speak up, please? We can't hear you so well.
Okay, yeah. I just got... the idea or the question why we are talking about Europe in general, or you are, because in my opinion, I come from a leftist background, I guess, and Europe seems more like a prison after hearing all of that than a free space for people to come here and live. Why? And what is your opinion on that, being politicians and being artists and being activists?
I think we're discussing the stadium of the European Union and about Europe in general on a very skeptic high level. If you compare all the statistics of living in several parts of the world, the European Union countries are one of the richest ones. We have like the most liberal and pluralistic values here. People can find their own businesses. We have the easiest way from being coming from a very low income class to get really high. Of course, everything is not perfect, but we have a very high standard here. I think what we were talking about is mainly the social responsibility of the European Union and about Europe countries, which we were missing in the last years and in the last decades. And this is something also in the context of globalization where we have to correct it. And also, I think, of course, you're absolutely right. The topic of our talk was the bias of Europeans who were like very focused on just being European. I think when we have for example, children from foreign countries. I know a Kurdish child and a Turkish child who had like a fight from their hometown countries at the playground. And we have German teachers who don't know what they are talking about. And like I think this could be a kind of example that we get to be global citizens in every kind and dimension. And this means that in every atmosphere we're living in Germany, but also in the European Union, we need to find an education. And we need to find historical perspectives which are like more than just European.
And I think freedom. I'm always thinking about the freedom, like freedom of speech is very important for a writer, and freedom in general. Any one of you find himself in one day under dictatorship, if he couldn't fight, leave. This is rule number one. Don't stay under the dictatorship ever. For no reason. If the third world happened in Europe, you are welcome to come to Syria. I will help you with the migration board. I mean it. It's happened like this. Never know. No one, every person have the right to defend his family and his children and put him in a safe place. This is number one. And then we think about what we have great things here in Europe. Freedom of speech, freedom of thinking, the way you want to be, you write what you want, you are not arrested because what you say. I'm speaking as a writer. You can express yourself. This is really great from this civilization, and we should save it. This is real human values. And number 13, the Declaration of Human Rights, number 13, if I remember it, every person have the right to go to any place he want and go back to his land in the time he wants. This is a human rights. You can read it like it. This is our human rights, that every person he decided where he to go.
Thank you. I think we stopped the talk about European civilization with the human rights. That's good. Thank you so much for your attention and participation in this discussion. Thank you so much for coming, Rokaya Diallo, Gayat Almadoun, and Diana Kinnert. This was very interesting talk. And have a nice day, all of you here at the book fair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hallo.
Danke fürs Zuhören. Wir sehen uns auf der nächsten Leipziger Buchmesse.